We all need an advocate. Risky story, this one, but it's funny, I think. In the category of being careful what you ask for, I found this little cautionary tale on the internet. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's still pretty amusing. It goes, "Dear Audrey Advice, my son is a strapping 265-pound star linebacker at our local university and a leader in our church youth group. We couldn't be prouder of him. However, I returned from grocery shopping today and found him prancing around the house in one of my dresses. What should I do? Sincerely, Confused in Texas." You ready for this? "Dear Confused, this is really a delicate situation, but I'd have to say that if your son is wearing your dresses, you need to go on a diet immediately." Didn't see that coming, did you? One of the most treacherous areas of life and relationships is the exchange of truth. To tell the truth to someone you know and love and respect is a risky proposition. Think of those questions that a wife asks her husband that is truly dangerous to answer. Like when your beloved wife tries on a new dress and stands before her husband and asks, "Does this make me look fat?" You don't answer that question ever. We can also flip it around and worry for a wife who is asked by her husband if she likes the paint color he has chosen for the living room. I want you to think for a moment of someone in your life who told you a truth about yourself that was difficult to hear. A truth that was uncomfortable, maybe even painful to hear. Maybe it made you angry or made you defensive. Maybe it hurt your feelings. Maybe you wondered how she or he could be your friend and say that kind of thing to you. Maybe it hurt you so deeply. It's quite possible it hurt you so deeply that you decided the relationship was something that could not survive, even if they were a friend or a family member. But even if you were deeply hurt, and it maybe it took some time, you realize the truth of what was being shared with you. And maybe over time, as you considered what was shared with you, you begin to understand how much you love and respected the person who shared it with you. Who has done that for you? Anybody? Think about a time when you could not stand for yourself. Maybe you didn't have the strength or the courage or the confidence. Maybe grief and loss had broken your heart so deeply. Maybe you were so tired and fatigued you didn't know which end was up. Who was it who came and stood next to you, who held you up, who loaned you his or her strength to get through, loaned you their faith to get through? Who are the wisdom figures in your life? Your go-to people when you're lost or you're confused, you don't know which way to turn. Someone you can go to help you regain your center and your balance. Who are the ones from whom you hide nothing and to whom you have entrusted everything because you need them? Let me give you some examples of what I'm talking about. This one's very personal. When I was a student minister in Welland, Ontario at First Baptist Church, Welland, in what seems like, a long time ago, almost 40 years ago now, I was given an assignment during that stay at First Baptist Welland to preach at the evening service. Yes, it was one of those rarities of two services every Sunday. I honestly admit that I was quite excited at having that kind of an opportunity as a student, because I hadn't had very many opportunities to preach at that point, and I was really wanting to test myself to see how I would handle it. So I worked hard and prepared my message, and I delivered it on a Sunday night with as much authority and vigor as I could muster. After the service, people were gracious, which is what I experienced a lot, and they said nice things, and then Laura and I headed back to Hamilton's to begin our work week, our school week. The following weekend, we were back in Welland, and my supervisor, the wonderful late, great Glenn Barrett, wonderful pastor there, he was my supervisor, and he had me into his office for our regular weekly supervisory session. He said he wanted to talk to me about my sermon from the previous Sunday night. In my arrogance, I believed I was in for some compliments, that he was just going to rave about my wonderful words. I was really wrong. Glenn went on to report that he'd actually been stewing about this meeting with me all week. It was costing him sleep and upsetting his stomach, of all things. And then Glenn proceeded to report that my sermon was absolutely horrible. Several folks in the congregation who had been there that evening actually came and complained to him about what I said. Their complaint was not about the content of the sermon. It was really more about the way I presented it. I came off as an arrogant individual. I used pronouns throughout the sermon like you, 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 instead of we. As if the lesson did not apply to me, but only to the people in the pews. It was very hard for Glenn that day to be blunt with me. Very hard. And I admit that as he was sharing with me, I was at first angry and very disappointed, but I quickly began to realize the wisdom in what he said. I also confirmed the truth of what he said when I went back and I looked at my notes from the previous Sunday. It was a risky thing for Glenn to be so honest with me, being a young, inexperienced person or pastor, but I needed him to be so with me. The lesson that week, very on in my student days, serves me very well even to now. I have never forgotten what he said, ever. For 37 years as a pastor, I have tried to be very conscious of making sure that whatever lesson I am trying to make to anybody, that I always include myself in it. You listen very carefully, and I use most often the pronouns we, our, us, far more than you. For many years now, as I'm preparing a message, I hear his voice ringing in my heart and in my ears, reminding myself that whatever pronouncement I make to anybody, I'm also making to myself. Glenn is just one of many others just like him, who were brave enough to come up to me over the years, and still do, by the way, to make sure I am trying to stay on an even keel, on the straight path. And sometimes they do so at a great cost to themselves. All of us need someone like Glenn in our lives. All of us. Who are the people like that for you? In what ways did they show up to stand with you? What did they say to you that you have never forgotten? What did they do that made a difference? What are the things about them for which you will be forever grateful? Anyone who knows me knows that Laura has also been a person like that for me for almost 4 decades. She calls me out when I've gone too far, joked too much, or being unobservant to what's going on right in front of me. Deacons and church members over the years have also called me out on all kinds of missteps, and sometimes they've done so at the cost, personal cost of any warm feelings I might have had for them, because there was a greater good at stake. How have you been such a person for someone else? As setting aside wanting to be liked to speak hard truths to someone you love and who you want to thrive and grow is a hard thing to do. Here is a true story that, unfortunately, as a pastor, and because I'm concerned, I'm hearing more like these stories more and more all the time. It's a true story. It comes again from a site about advocacy. Jim has dementia. He says he can't think like he once did. He's not as sharp. Jim was befriended and he was abused. Staff at the local bank noticed that Jim was being brought in regularly by his neighbors. Large amounts of money were being withdrawn, and this left Jim without enough money for food and his bills. Advocacy Matters, that's a social service agency in the States, provided Jim with an advocate, a listening ear so he could talk about what was going on in his life and take action to change his life. And Jim told the advocate that he was angry. He was frightened. He explained that he thought the neighbors were being his friends, but they had brought paperwork into his house and they bullied him into signing things he didn't understand. Jim did not understand that he had given his neighbors power over his property and his finances. He told the advocate that's not what he wanted. And Jim instructed his advocate to act for him. And the advocate then went to the police and worked with local authorities to protect Jim and others the same couple had tried to use in the same way or abuse in the same way. The police investigated Jim's situation as a crime. And the local authorities worked with Jim and his advocate to stop the neighbors from taking more of his own money. Jim's advocate was there with him on his side, supporting him throughout a difficult and very frightening time. And Jim told his advocate that he didn't know what he would have done without her. The stories I have told you about my life and others, and the ones I'm asking you to recall in your own minds and hearts, are stories of Pentecost. Listen, and you'll hear in them the native language of God being spoken through the advocates. You will hear, as people's lives are being put together, the rattling of dry bones coming together like the traditional Old Testament lesson for Pentecost from Ezekiel 37. In the valley of dry bones, bone to bone comes together when the advocate stands with you. You can feel a fresh wind blowing. You can taste the new wine, Acts 2:13. But I think there's more to these stories and more to the people in them. In today's gospel lesson in John 15, Jesus talks about the coming of the advocate or the helper or the spirit of truth. What if each of those stories you and I have just told or remembered is a story of the Holy Spirit's advocacy in our lives? It is the Holy Spirit's truth-telling. What if those people are our advocates? What if the advocate, in whatever ways he or she shows up, comes not to advocate to another on our behalf, but rather to speak the truth into us for our own benefit? They are truth tellers, these advocates. They call us more deeply to our authentic selves. They are the ones who come and transform and change our lives. And sometimes that means they create in us conflict and disequilibrium or speak uncomfortable truths. And other times, the advocates come and they comfort and they encourage and they console us. And these dear souls who come to us seek no gain for themselves. Rather, they invest themselves in us for us. They are a gift of God. They are a gift of the Holy Spirit. They are the wind of change that blows through our valley of dry bones. They rehydrate the dry and desiccated marrow of our lives. They keep us accountable to ourselves, not only for what we have done and left undone, but also for all the possibilities that still lay before us. They remind us that we are not at a dead end. They open us to our future by helping us see visions and dream dreams. I'm sure you've noticed something. Across our country, our hydro generating stations are all over the place. And some are like the one in Niagara Falls. It uses water pressure to generate incredible amounts of power, right? We also used to have coal plants like Nanticoke, where water was heated up by the burning of coal to produce electrical power. There are also in our province and in our country nuclear power plants. And more recently, especially over Haldimand Way, there are a lot of wind and solar installations that generate power for us. All this infrastructure in order that I can go home and turn on a light or cook my supper and all kinds of other tasks, right? If you manage to be near a large generating facility, you will notice hundreds of big towers connected by thick metal wires that carry that electrical power away from the generating station. Tons and tons of power flowing out from those plants. But do you realize that I cannot take my power directly from a power station? I can't. If I hook my house directly up to a power station, the moment I flip the switch, my house would burn down. Instead, the power makes its way to substations where the power is transformed into more manageable levels to be used by consumers like us. Without these transformers, the power is useless. It's incredibly dangerous, actually, to us. The Holy Spirit, the Helper, is like a transformer. The pure, holy truth of God, when it's taken in its fullness, would be way too much for us to handle. So the Holy Spirit takes what truth we need to hear and tailors it specifically for each one of us. That truth transmitted by the Holy Spirit to us is customized to meet our personal needs. The transmitted truth may come directly to us, or it may come by way of an advocate. We need to understand, you and I, that we are always in process. We're always working towards becoming our truer selves. And we need other people helping us to get there. We need advocates. We need truth tellers. We need marrow rehydrators, if you like, to stand with and beside us. No one gets through this life alone. Regardless of what we've been told or come to believe, there is no such thing as a self-made man or self-made woman. They don't exist. Someone has stood with those who achieve great things. Someone. Someone has stood with you and me. Who are those people for you? I want you to picture their faces in your mind. I want you to think of their names. I want you to offer thanksgiving to God for their presence in your lives. And then I want you to open yourself to the next one who might be coming to you because they need an advocate. Pentecost is the promise that today someone is standing with you, whispering in your ear, knocking on the door of your heart, taking you by the hand, to bring you back to the land of yourself, Ezekiel 37:12. That person may be here today. They may come to you tomorrow, or the next day, or the next day. and so on.